you began taking art more seriously just a couple of years ago when the COVID outbreak started. And at first you were working mainly with colored pencils. I think that's correct as far as I could tell. So just talk about, what was your early work like? What kind of things were you drawing back then?
First starting out, I held little to no confidence behind my artwork. So rarely would I venture outside of my comfort zone. In the beginning, my early work was mostly sunsets and trees, things of that nature.
Okay, and was that, I mean, I imagine that part of that had to be because you're starting from a place of confinement. So, yeah. So when you kind of, the kind of initial imagery that came to you, do you feel like it was it all nature? And do you feel like that's where that was coming from?
Yeah, I would think that I had a natural pull towards nature, being that was one of the main consistent things in my surrounding.
Yeah. So at some point on this journey of teaching yourself how to draw and how to paint, you turned that talent into a business. You started exchanging your art for food and whatever else you needed. So were those essentially like commissions you were doing for other youth, or was that like how much of a exchange business was that for you at the time?
No, actually, clientele for that organization mainly consists of correctional officers and staff throughout the facility. Mm. Although I had the opportunity, I never really worked with kids as far as business opportunities.
Go ahead, say some more.
What was the last part?
I was asking, were those essentially commissions for other youth, and you said not really. Right, you said it's more for the adult facility?
Yeah, I think it was more of like wondering where my art would go. So instead of like doing artwork and stuff that I know would be like in the cell next to me, I was more comfortable with doing artwork that I know would be like in homes and in offices and things like that.
Okay, that's interesting. So knowing that it was going to be like out in the world, so to speak, like that was a comfort to you?
Yeah, I think that was it.
Yeah. How, not wanting it nearby, I mean, there's something that sounds kind of nice about like being able to check in on your work. Like if it was nearby, if it was still in the facility, say, like you'd be able to still like, you'd be able to see it around. You'd be like, oh yeah, I did that. But that didn't really appeal to you.
Not at the time. I think my focus was more of getting my art out for more people to see. And I figured that keeping it within the facility would kind of limit that.
Right. Yeah, no, that makes sense. So it's really difficult, obviously, to be self-taught in any circumstance, but to be self-taught while incarcerated as a young person, that it takes a lot of hard work, takes a lot of talent. Have you gone about improving and growing as an artist despite these really difficult conditions?
While navigating myself through art, I kind of learned that the most effective way to gain new skills and better my pieces was to simply challenge myself and try new ideas. Whenever I came up with something new, I like would channel it and just see where that path would lead me.
Well, so give an example of what that looks like. Like without someone leading you, like just you know, doing this all off the top of your head, like how did you know how to challenge yourself? Like how did you know what to do to get better?
Okay, for example, when like I would draw faces, like my go-to would be like one position or things like that. So I try something new and like try to draw from like an angle or something like that. It was a lot of hard work, but the more that I do it, the more that it would look a lot better.
Okay, so like as opposed to, you know, maybe you've only been drawing face on, and then you do like a profile, you do them kind of slightly to the side, and then that would kind of help you kind of expand what you're able to do.
Yeah, a lot of just trying different things, different angles, stuff like that.
Okay, cool. So you made a piece for an auction at the National Association of Community and Restorative Justice Conference, Tommy was telling me, and that it ended up receiving the highest bid out of all the artwork that was put up for auction there. So to talk about what it was like to hear that had happened, that folks at the conference, I mean, you talked about wanting to see your art get out in the world, and then your art gets out to this conference and people, you know, bid it up, you know, more than any other piece of artwork there. So what was that like to feel people show so much tangible, like really put their money where their mouth is about being interested in your work?
Yeah, I was ecstatic. It moved me tremendously. I was able to attend the event, so seeing like crowds of people surround my painting to, you know, take pictures with it and just admire it left me in awe. Like altogether, it was just a great experience.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you've also done, while you've been locked up, you've also done an internship with SkyArt. You participated in Monica Trinidad's Making Art for the People workshop. You were recently part of the inaugural cohort of the Grassroots Collaborative's Chicago Creatives for Justice Fellowship. These names are so long. What were your favorite parts of those experiences? What were some of the most valuable things that you feel like you took out of those that programming?
One of my favorite parts of it all was simply being in an environment with other artists and even artists with more experience than myself, like meeting them, learning about them and their process of art making. One of the most valuable things that I've learned was that a lot of the participating artists worked with digital art. And if I wasn't the only person in the room, I was one of few that worked with raw materials. And so it was something about that that really stuck with me.
Were there any people in particular, like, can you give an example of some of the folks that really kind of, I don't know if mentor is the right word, if you ever felt like anyone in that program was like a real mentor for your work, but just someone that you learned a lot from and something specific that they were able to you were able to kind of take away from what they've been doing?
That's a tough one.
That's okay, you can take a second.
Yeah. Well, there were like a lot of artists that in the room that would inspire me just off the fact that there are so many different techniques and things like that. But there's one female that I remember, and I met her like a few times. I think she participated in almost all three of the other organizations. Mm-hmm. And just like seeing like the many different things that she could do and like so many different aspects and different levels, that really kind of pushed me a little bit harder to critique my work in a way.
Yeah. Well, so seeing somebody with that level of versatility, and then seeing that so many people were involved in like digital media and new media, is that, I mean, obviously probably new media is not an option for you at Warrenville, but is new media and getting into kind of more digital work, is that something that you're interested in the future?
Definitely. By seeing everyone else work with digital arts and things like that, it kind of opened like a new door for me, a new field. There's so many things that you can do with digital art that I wasn't aware of until, of course, the programs.
Like what? What type of stuff is exciting to you about it?
So I kind of feel as if it gives it more of a clean look, a little bit more professional, things like that.
So who are your influences and your inspirations as an artist? And these don't have to be other artists. These can be musicians. These can be just whatever kind of really, you know, helps you get your kind of creative juices flowing.
As much as I wish that I had like a list of, like a bunch of creative people and artists that really, motivated me and pushed me, for me, it would be my counselor. Mm-hmm. It was her that like played an enormous role with like, pushing me to get my creative, flow, like really going and things like that. She like brought different like ideas and stuff like that from Instagram artists and things like that. And she was also big on like Virgil, so she'd come in with like Off-White and things like that, and it would just inspire me and give me more like ideas to work with.
Oh, nice. So she would go and find stuff and bring it into you that she thought you would be into, like off of Instagram and stuff like that.
Yeah, there was this one artist, and she used to always purchase like coffee mugs with like the artwork on it, things like that. And I just thought it was really cool. And of course, I envisioned like my own artwork on things like that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, in a number of your pieces that I've seen, I want to talk about the eyes. It feels like the eyes, a lot of times they're either closed or they're redacted or they're covered or they're just missing completely. Can you talk about that symbolism and what that's speaking to in these kind of eyeless or eyes closed or eyes redacted portraits?
So when creating, I kind of feel as if giving or including eyes or leaving them intact kind of personalizes the canvas, if that makes any sense. Mm-hmm. To elaborate, when creating, if I like include eyes and, you know, leave them clear to vision, I kind of think as if my audience would feel as if they're looking at someone versus if I don't include the eyes or cover them as you put them or things like that. I would like to think that my audience could imagine themselves in the portrait and kind of put their, you know, their self in it as well. And I like to think that that creates an effortless emotional connection with my art. So that's what the eyes mean to me.
That's so interesting because, you know, so many people talk about, they talk about the, just what you said, that that aspect of like everybody wants, oh, I want it to be like personal. I want it to be specific. And so that's so interesting to me that, that that's not what you're looking for, because that way it's almost like a, like an empty vessel, right? Like an empty vessel, and then people can fill it with themselves, right? Like, like you said, identify with it, kind of put themselves in it. Yeah, that's really interesting. Gotta be, yeah, I feel like there's more, there's one more thing I want to ask you about that, but now I can't remember what it was. Anyway, well, hopefully it'll come to me. And speaking of visual images, yeah, come on in, yeah. So crowns are another visual symbol that repeat across some of your recent work. What is it about the imagery of crowns that's kind of capturing your imagination at the moment?
Yeah, so being incarcerated as a young person can be unpleasant. And so myself, I use a lot of mantras and a lot of inspirational quotes to keep like a healthy, positive, and powerful mindset. And so I felt like crowns would be like the best way to represent that. It's kind of my way of showing that no matter the predicaments or even the inevitable, sometimes cruel routines that prison sometimes have to offer, that like my value as a person will not and like has not been decreased.
Mm-hmm. So the crown kind of symbolizes that inner worth that remains through all of that. Yeah. This is what I was going to get back to about the eyes. When I saw it, it reminded me so much of, it seemed so to speak so powerfully to just kind of the carceral state in general, you know, because that there's so much of that in kind of legal documents, you know, they redact stuff that, you know, that you see the court transcript and they've, you know, they've blacked stuff out. And so the pieces that I've seen where you've literally like, you know, done like black redaction over the eyes as so many people do in court documents, reminded me, it seemed to speak very powerfully of the system itself. Did that have any resonance for you? Was that on your mind at all, or were you, was it really just kind of like trying to make something that people could see themselves in?
Well, making the art, it was mainly like just leaving, you know, like a blank space for people to fill in. But afterwards, I started to realize some things like that. With myself, with my case, there was like a lot of things that were like, I'd say, like swept under the rug and like not really looked at. And so I kind of felt like it was me against the world. So kind of leaving the eyes out kind of like takes emotion and stuff out of the picture. So, yeah.
Yeah, because so much, I don't know if you felt this way about your situation, but I feel like so often those things that are left out, like it feels like that's the most important stuff. Like that's the stuff that it's like, if people only knew that, mm-hmm. like then they would really get it. But because it's not there, like no one is, I'm not going to get anyone to be able to understand what my full like purpose, what my full experience, you know, was, because all the things that would make me most human and get people to see me how I want to be seen are being deliberately left out.
Exactly. I've heard like plenty of times that like the eyes are kind of like the window of the soul. So to like block them out and to like not include them, all people really see is like the shell of that. So,
yeah. So you mentioned when we spoke on Zoom, you mentioned that at first you really kind of downplayed how good your work was, and you didn't quite see how great you were as an artist, and you kind of played it off as if it was, oh, I'm just doing this to pass the time. But these days, I think you've said that you've come to really truly believe that you have a future as an artist, which I think everyone that's seen your art agrees with. So what changed for you? What allowed you to really see and accept that you were talented and that you had a future in this, and this wasn't just like, oh, I'm passing the time?
It's really hard to say, but I think like the biggest part about it was just like over time I learned to appreciate my creativity and my ability and the things that I'm able to do, because there's like people who like really admire my work and things like that. Definitely also the programs and opportunities that were brought to me while being incarcerated, I think that's a lot itself.
So we've talked about kind of your process and how you really haven't been working that long, and you've already grown so much as an artist in such a short period of time. What do you think is the next step in your creative life? What are your goals for your artwork? And we talked a little bit about like getting into maybe new media, digital media, but what are some other goals? What do you kind of see as your next steps as an artist?
Right now, a lot of my focus have been leaning more towards more publicity and exposure. So I'm currently working on a website. It's going to serve I guess, like, the purpose of an online portfolio. But eventually and potentially, I want to have, like, an online store as well. And like I mentioned before, like, sell merchandise with, like, artwork on it and things like that.
Okay, so kind of like the cups that your council used to bring in, like, mm-hmm. like stuff like that, like shirts, cups, posters.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Well, so I want to, those are all the questions I had, but we're flying here. So I'm like, we got to say more. I feel like you're limiting, you're giving such clipped little answers. I know you talked about, like, when we spoke on Zoom, we talked about the way that a lot of times as, like, a talented young person in a facility, people want credit for that. Like, people want to be identified with that and be like, oh yeah, like we got today, everything she knows. How do you imagine pushing back against that? Like, what does that look like for you to take ownership over your own work and your own talent and not let people kind of slide in and take credit for what you're doing?
Sometimes it could be difficult, but recently what I've been doing is, in the past, a lot of my opportunities and art things like that that were presented came from the facility themselves. Like, they would find them for me. So with my mentors and things like that, we look for, like, my own opportunities, and they advocate for me and I advocate for myself, so that before the facility even knows about the opportunity that, I want to get involved in, like, I've already put my foot in the door and told them first person about, like, me and how I came about.
So taking it proactive, not waiting for the things to come to you, but being proactive, you go find them yourself and then kind of put you in the driver's seat in that way.
Yeah.
Cool. I also wanted to ask you about I've seen a couple pieces that we have here that they're multimedia, basically. Like, they have, I think it's the hair I'm thinking of, where, like, the hair will be made of, like, I don't know if it's yarn or what it is, yeah. But can you talk about that, about kind of bringing in, not just, like, color pencils and paint, but bringing in, you know, things that make the piece, you know, three-dimensional? And how you guys started doing that?
Okay. So my counselor used to have, like, a box of, like, a bunch of random things. Like, there'd be marbles in there and, like, markers and glitter and things like that. And one day I was just in her office and I was, like, trying to come up with, like, different things. So she let me take the box back. And while I was in my room, I had, like, a canvas that I was working on, but really didn't know, like, which direction to go in with it. So it was just, like, sitting for a while. And I started to use yarn and stuff as, like, the hair for, like, texture and things like that. And I remember, like, bringing it to my counselor and showing her, like, you know, this is something that I want to get, like, more experience on and things like that. And so, of course, like, she helped me with that a little bit more. It was just trial and error, I guess.
Yeah. What about in terms of, a lot of artists that are incarcerated or that are formerly incarcerated, you know, they talk about kind of the intersection of their work with their struggle to get free, basically. And then when they get out, you know, I mean, and I think you've been doing a lot of this, like the auction and, like, at the conference, you know, using your work in spaces that, to push for abolition, your own freedom, things like that. How are you thinking about that in terms of your art, not just as a commodity that you can sell, that you can promote, but also as something that is part of helping kind of dismantle a system and make yourself and other people free?
In the past, I've made a few pieces that kind of push that motive. I haven't made any more recently, but of course, like, I have, like, interest to do so. Working with Monica Trinidad, we talked about, like, a lot of movement art to, like, get a lot of people involved and, you know, push them, like, for a cause. So that's definitely something that I've been planning to touch more on with, like, more artwork and things like that. I'm a person that kind of feels as if, like, images kind of speak more than words at times. So just to see an image will kind of, like, stir emotions and things like that. So making more artwork to push motives and things like that is definitely a part of my plan in the near future.
Well, speaking of Monica's workshop again, have you been able to stay in touch with some of the folks that you've met in those workshops? And I know, obviously, like, you can't going out with them, but, like, have you been able to, like, stay in touch over email or with letters or anything? Like, have you made, like, social connections that you feel, like, above and beyond the art that you've been able that you feel like you're going to try to maintain or or kind of foster when you're able to spend time with those people directly?
There's been a few individuals that I've met that we have maintained direct contact, but being like my circumstances and things like that, we can't like be so close and, mm-hmm. and involved and with just everyone. So a lot of my mentors kind of take, you know, my business cards and things like that that I come across, and they're like the middleman between us most of the times. Yeah.
All right. Well, is there anything else you want to, I feel like we flew through that. So is there anything else you want to talk about? We can, we've got time. So, you know, whether it's, yeah, about your art or background or anything that you want to get a chance to speak on, since this is a good chance for that. And you get, well, no, I've been trying to, I'm throwing everything I can think of at you. I'm trying to, you know, keep you talking. Yeah, I mean, I mean, you mentioned that like you don't really have a lot of like family influence in terms of artists, but yeah. you said you had maybe a couple people that had been locked up and had created work, and that was a lead for you. So yeah, I mean, background is anything.
Within my family, I never really had like a bunch of artists, but I did have an uncle. He was incarcerated for many years, and. One thing he would do is like create holiday cards, mm-hmm. and they would like really impress me, because I didn't know like of him to be like an artist or a drawer or anything like that. And like in return, I try to like imitate it a little bit, like make my own holiday cards send back. But of course, at the time, they were terrible. but other than like my uncle, I really didn't have like a bunch of family members that influenced art or anything like that. Mm.